I'll first explore the concept of a religious naturalist orientation, also called an eco-spiritual orientation. I'll then ask how a religious naturalist prays, and suggest that our nature poets have provisioned us with eloquent prayers in their writings. I'll end by describing my own efforts as a psalmist, where I transpose the Lord's Prayer into what I've called the Mother Nature's Prayer. I call myself a religious naturalist, where our t-shirt meme is "Religious Naturalists Take Nature to Heart." I've written a book about this orientation, and we formed an online Religious Naturalist Association, and the links were supposed to be in the order of service, but that didn't happen. Gabby is going to send all of you who are members of the church anyway a copy of these links so you don't have to write them down, but those of you who are home, you could scribble if you want. So traditional and indigenous religions all adopt a core story, a mythos, like the life and the teachings of Moses or Jesus or the Buddha. Religious naturalists adopt what we call everybody's story, our science-based understandings of the natural world from the Big Bang onward, including the astonishing emergence and evolution of planetary life. We then go on to explore this story for its religious potential, pondering its existential and moral implications, and celebrating the spiritual responses that it elicits, including awe, wonder, reverence, humility, assent, gratitude, and joy. Let me pause here to consider the word spiritual. For some people, although probably not many here, it connotes an unwelcomed supernatural framework. But the word comes from spiritus, Latin for breath, and connotes essence. For religious naturalists, our spiritual selves, our most deeply felt selves, are fully essential and fully natural. I call myself a religious naturalist, and I also call myself an eco-spiritual naturalist. This is in part because it avoids using the word religious, which presents difficulty for some people, although maybe no one here, and in part because it lifts up the moral thrust of our orientation, our eco-mindedness. Importantly, this includes the ecosystem called language-based culture that we humans construct and hence have the ability to reconfigure. There are many online associations that promote specific orientations along the eco-spiritual axis, including meditative practice, paganism, pantheism, eco-activism, and education. Up there was a link to the Eco-Spiritual Hub, where we provide introductions and links to these groups. Indeed, some of us are making moves to launch something we're calling RNUU, Religious Naturalist UU, pronounced Renew. So while I wouldn't venture to say that we're looking at a capital M movement called eco-spirituality, I would say that things are moving along. Let's turn next to the matter of prayer, which is, of course, a feature of all religious traditions. In a UU sermon, it's always good to include a quote from our forebear, Ralph Waldo Emerson. And happily, in 1841, he wrote a treatise on prayer. He denounces prayer where it serves as a petition to obtain something one wants to have. Instead, he writes, quote, "Prayer is the contemplation of the facts of life from the highest point of view. It is the soliloquy of a beholding and jubilant soul." Contemplating the facts of life entails, in our time, and immersion in everybody's story. The highest point of view indicates awe, reverence, and the humility that comes with reverence. Beholding means being grateful. Jubilant derives from make a joyful noise. These are the very spiritual responses that I listed earlier as being central to a religious naturalist orientation. Hence, I would venture to call Ralph Waldo Emerson a card-carrying religious naturalist, at least in his younger days. Emerson's words provide us with an eloquent definition of prayer, but what do eco-spiritual prayers actually sound like? Many come to us from writers who are called nature poets. Let's listen to some of them. We just read one of them, Mary Oliver's Sleeping in the Forest, a beautiful prayer of gratitude for the planetary matrix and its transformative gifts. We can next immerse ourselves in Wendell Berry's reverent poem, The Peace of Wild Things. When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water, and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of the wild things who do not tax themselves with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world, and I am free. And because I, for one, can never have too much Mary Oliver, here are two more, where these express humility and jubilation. First is Wild Geese, probably her most famous poem. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep rivers, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things. And then mindful. Every day I see or hear something that more or less kills me with delight, that leaves me like a needle in the haystack of light. It was what I was born for, to look, to listen, to lose myself inside this soft world, to instruct myself over and over in joy and acclamation. Nor am I talking about the exceptional, the fearful, the dreadful, the very extravagant, but of the ordinary, the very drab, the daily presentations. Oh, good scholar, I say to myself, how can you help but grow wise with such teachings as these? The untrimmable light of the world, the oceans shine, the prayers that are made out of grass. Prayers that are made out of grass, the grace of the world that makes us free, a world that offers itself to our imagination, announcing our place in the family of things. This is how religious naturalists can give voice to the sacred, to the holy. These, I would say, can be our spoken prayers. We hold in our hearts as well the nature-infused narratives of indigenous peoples and pagan communities, where chants and ritual are vital spiritual avenues. And we hold in our hearts as well the human-infused wisdom to be found in the world's philosophies and religions, guiding our hopes and aspirations. Which takes us to the Lord's Prayer. In the Western world, the Lord's Prayer is everywhere. Many of you have likely recently attended an event or a ceremony where it was recited. It happened to me 3 times just this past summer. Let's remember how it goes in the King James Version, where those of you who know it by heart can join me. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen. Jesus voiced this prayer in Aramaic. It is found in Luke and repeated in Matthew as part of the Sermon on the Mount. Like the Old Testament Psalms, it is both a prayer and a poem, with haunting cadence and language. It expresses reverence, as in the beautiful phrase, "Hallowed be thy name." But the prayer is deeply dissonant for many of us, and certainly for religious naturalists. It addresses a Lord who resides in a heaven that is separate from the earth. And here I just love Peter Myers' song that your wonderful choir sang this morning, that has heaven being here. It addresses a Lord who resides in a heaven that is separate from the earth, a personality who creates and has power over, and it is a petition which Emerson excoriated, not only for daily bread, but also for forgiveness and deliverance and residence in the heavenly kingdom that is to come. Those of us whose religious sensibilities don't include these concepts have problems relating to this prayer. So this led me to wonder, has anybody rewritten the Lord's Prayer so that it expresses joyous and reverent gratitude to Mother Nature? Is there an eco-spiritual version of the Lord's Prayer? This led me to the UU website, figuring that just as many of the hymns in our hymnal have been given new words, so might there be new versions of the Lord's Prayer. I found a few, but they didn't speak to me. They were stuffy. You. So I decided to have a go at it myself. I typed out the King James Version and started amending, where my goal was to retain the poetic voice and meter of the original and retain some resonant phrases, like "Hallowed be thy name," but infuse the whole with non-theistic religious naturalist sensibilities. I called it the Mother Nature's Prayer. After a few drafts, I sent a version of it out to the listserv of the Religious Naturalist Association, and members sent back great suggestions that made it much better. Someone quipped that we were channeling the writers of the Gospels as they fine-tuned their Christian sensibilities, albeit we were using pixelated screens rather than parchment. The prayer that emerged retains the petition for daily bread, a petition that all living beings must bring to Mother Nature. But its other petitions are for tenderness and communion, echoing the lines read earlier from Mary Oliver, "I thought the earth remembered me. She took me back so tenderly, arranging her dark skirts, her pockets full of lichens and seeds." The prayer also makes an important change. We seek to repair our trespasses rather than ask that our trespasses be forgiven, thereby lifting up our responsibilities to social justice and eco-activism. We also seek deliverance from the curse of human dominion that we have been promised in Genesis 1. After dozens of iterations, the current version is printed in your order of service, correct?
It's on the screen.
On the screen. I'll first read it aloud, and then we can read it together. Our Mother, who art within us, hallowed be thy name. Thy ways evolve. Thy will calls forth this earth that is now our heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and fill us with tenderness as we repair our trespasses. And lead us forth into communion, and deliver us from dominion. For thine is our wellspring, and our grounding, and our glory, forever and ever. Amen. Our Mother, who art within us, hallowed be thy name. Thy ways evolve. Thy will calls forth this earth that is now our heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and fill us with tenderness as we repair our trespasses. And lead us forth into communion, and deliver us from dominion. For thine is our wellspring, and our grounding, and our glory, forever and ever. Amen. May it be so.